of our friends across the whole country can join in. And then that'll also include the screening. And then all four of us actually will be both doing the trivia questions, but also getting together at the end for a question and answer period. So if you go to the website of the film, which is thebeaverbelievers.com, there's a virtual screenings tab right there. So you can easily find it that way. You need the, otherwise you go to the OSU sports fan page. So it's thebeaverbelievers.com.
Well, I want to thank you guys for coming on the show on Earth Day especially, but also for all the great work you do. Sarah, Jacob, Emily, and Chris, thanks so much for joining us at KBOO today and for being a part of our Earth Day celebration. We've been talking with four very distinguished guests, Sarah Konigsberg, Jacob Shockey, Dr. Emily Fairfax, and Dr. Chris Jordan, doing great work to protect beavers and our shared ecosystem in the face of climate change. You can learn more about their organization, the Beaver Coalition, online at beavercoalition.org, and you can find out more about Sarah's documentary, The Beaver Believers, at thebeaverbelievers.com. Just a reminder, we're in the middle of KBOO's Spring Membership Drive. If you'd like to support programs like this and community radio, you can become a member by going to the KBOO website, kboo.fm, and clicking on the big donate button on the top right of the screen. You can also show your support for KBOO and Earth Day by purchasing a limited edition Plant the Seeds, Restore the Roots t-shirt at kboo.fm/edshirt. Together, we can help protect the Earth and all its creatures. I'm Ken Jones, and this has been a special Earth Day edition of Radio Zine on KBOO Community Radio. Many thanks to Sarah, Jacob, Emily, and Chris for joining us today, and to all of you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
The Great Depression left millions of able and willing Americans bewildered and jobless. In 1933, the federal government came to the help of local agencies which had fought a courageous but losing fight against the growing need for relief. But the dole was not enough. Good, sound men and women wanted to earn the help they got, to hold up their heads, to keep themselves from going rusty. Retail business needed their purchasing power to stimulate trade. And all over America, communities needed all sorts of improvements in public services which had been cut off or postponed during the lean years when local revenues were pitifully low. The Works Progress Administration was launched late in 1935 as the key agency in the federal work program to employ able people from relief roles. Projects were inaugurated and sponsored by local officials who also subscribed local funds to buy materials and supplement the federal money, which went largely in wages to the workers. What does the WPA program mean to the rest of us, to the country as a whole? Does this work pay America? Here is the record of it to judge for yourself. City streets pounded by ever-increasing traffic are modern.
We remember a time when our our elders said, a new world is on her way, and now she is here. Our communities, once tormented by corporate timber companies who logged away the forests and sprayed toxic chemicals in our water, are now free to care for the land as if the future matters. No longer are clear cuts scarring the landscape, eroding the soil and dirtying streams. No longer does the powerful timber dollar lead far away timber companies to come and buy up all the land and cut and scrape and poison it. Those days are gone. In this new world, we practice climate smart, watershed wise forestry. We derive our management practices from traditional ecological knowledge and take direction from cultures that listen to the earth. We still get wood from the forest, but we use a variety of natural building materials in addition to wood products. We consume thoughtfully and wisely. Forest jobs are gainful, unionized, and respected. Those once employed in destructive industrial logging are well-paid forest caretakers, thoughtful researchers, environmental educators, adventure guides, and fire rangers. Forest workers once contracted to receive menial wages to endlessly cut and replant young trees have now formed worker cooperatives with salaries and benefits to do meaningful, life-affirming work. Every clear cut has been replanted with diverse native and climate-adapted species or just allowed to naturally reseed and regrow. We brought back fire to forests that wanted to burn and are healing the industrial timberlands that were so degraded by a century of short-sighted management. The miles of logging roads have been allowed to grow over. There are no longer watersheds characterized by rows and rows of single-age Douglas fir plantations. Today, rivers and headwater streams run cool and clean, and communities no longer worry that drinking water will turn up muddied, toxic, or run dry. Today, our forests are recovering. The locked gates and no trespassing signs that once kept us out of private forest lands have been unlocked and thrown away. This land is now the commons. It's cared for, it's all of our land, and now we act like it.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to Coast Range Radio, a radio program of the Coast Range Association. My name is Andrew. I am very excited to be sharing with you a special two-part series of our program featuring members of the Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance's Green New Deal for Pacific Northwest Forests Working Group. Over the next two shows, we will be sharing members of the working group's visions for the future of Pacific Northwest forests, interspersed with conversations about the Green New Deal and how it relates to our forests. Coast Range Radio also has several past interviews regarding the Green New Deal, industrial forests, and rural communities if you want to visit our archive to hear more. That first vision you just heard was from Sam Kropp, co-host of this show and coordinator for the Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance. Sam and I are interviewing other members of the Green New Deal working group, Matt Stevenson of the Sunrise Movement PDX, Sandra Legui of Oregon Wild, and Dylan Plummer of Cascadia Wildlands. This working group has collaborated with many others on the creation of a Green New Deal for Pacific Northwest Forests vision and document to organize a future-focused and justice-centered movement for our forests in a changing climate. And I think Sam was going to start things off with some questions from our great interviewees.
Awesome. Yeah, it's super wonderful to have all of you here today to talk about a Green New Deal for Pacific Northwest Forests. I want to get us started by asking you all, why even focus on a Green New Deal? What makes the concept of a Green New Deal response to the climate crisis unique and exciting to you?
I think a Green New Deal brings a lot of new value and perspectives, especially from, I guess, older like forest defense work, especially with the focus on a just transition and both like the forest and the wild, but also people and the people who depend on the forests. And by taking both of those in account in a Green New Deal, it allows you to better help and protect everybody involved.
Thank you, Matt, for that. Does anyone want to add to what Matt was saying?
Yeah, I think, I mean, The New Deal, the original New Deal, really informs much of the landscape of the Pacific Northwest, for better and for worse. And I think that the Green New Deal really provides this incredible opportunity to take what we like about the New Deal, these sweeping investments in infrastructure, and reimagine it in a way that addresses the inequities that are really rampant in our society, whether environmental or social or economic, and again, kind of center our work on a positive vision instead of playing, you know, catch up against all of the bad things in the world, against all the bad projects that we oppose. It provides an opportunity for us to build a coalition of groups kind of across the spectrum to really come out and say, you know, what it is that we want to advocate for, what future we want to really work together to create. And so, you know, like Matt was saying, it gives us an opportunity not only to address environmental issues, but to kind of take on the whole gambit of the problems that are facing our society today, you know, which many people, myself included, would say is probably a kind of historical amount, breadth of crises, whether it's housing crises or climate crises or the crisis of white supremacy and the murdering of Black folks by the police in our state and the crisis of imperialism, you know, impacting countries across the world. And so, yeah, just I think it's really an exciting opportunity to join different regions around the United States and different communities across the world and starting to build this vision for, you know, not only what could be, but what we must create if we are to survive in this new decade and in this new century.
Yeah, I might add that I think one of the reasons I'm excited about this is because everyone's using the word opportunity. It's an opportunity to work in solidarity with groups and activists who have been doing parts of the vision that we're talking about, a Green New Deal, for years and years. But this is a way that we can all work together towards something common. And, you know, from, you know, a nearly 50-year-old environmental advocacy organization's perspective, you know, that it's easy to get siloed. And a lot of the things that I feel like, you know, traditional environmental groups have been doing for decades fits really nicely into a Green New Deal framework, even if we haven't been talking about it in that way. And this is now an opportunity to talk about it in a different way and reach people a different way and see the intersections between, you know, our work to support ecological restoration on public lands, for example, and connect that with great jobs in the woods that benefits communities. And maybe we weren't drawing those connections before, but working together around a concept like this is a way of doing that.
That's really well put, everybody. It's been really, really an inspiration coming up with these visions and working intersectionally across all these different sectors. But a big question for this group is, you know, why are we talking about forests and why are they so important as far as climate change? What is the opportunities within a Green New Deal? Where are we lacking that we need a lot of work to be done? Why Pacific Northwest forests? Why not, you know, transportation or the energy sector? Why are you all focused on forests?
I mean, it's awesome that there are so many different components of, you know, the climate movement that are working on renewable energy, on transportation, on justice issues, and forests are another angle, you know, to work on addressing climate change. And honestly, they're my passion. They're amazing ecosystems and bring all of us here in the Pacific Northwest so many benefits, including being a natural solution to climate change. And that's a part that frankly, has not been recognized until recently. Our forests are amazing at pulling carbon out of the atmosphere and sequestering it for hundreds of years in certain ecosystem types. And if we disallow these forests to grow, they can remove, you know, just tons and tons of carbon from the atmosphere, you know, on a scale that rivals the rainforests in South America. And we need to recognize that.
Yeah, any Green New Deal or climate effort in the Pacific Northwest must take into account forests, because they are both the largest carbon forests, which are under their current management are the largest carbon emissions in Oregon, but also have the potential to be one of the largest climate solutions in Oregon. And I feel like there's not a lot of forest work in a climate or carbon theme under the idea of a Green New Deal. So being able to recontextualize protecting forests under a Green New Deal is something I feel that's ignored and allows us to elevate forests along with all the other stuff that's being talked about on a national level.
Yeah, and one thing I'd add to that, right, is in our current society where we're also technocentric and there's so much hype around these like carbon capture and storage techno solutions to climate change, it's really critical to understand that the best infrastructure that we can be investing in to address climate change is the natural infrastructure that has been in these landscapes since time immemorial, and just reminding ourselves that forests are infrastructure, rivers are infrastructure, mycelial networks are infrastructure that we need to invest in protecting and restoring if we are to have any hope of mitigating the climate crisis. And in turn, in those investments always need to be grounded in efforts to deconstruct white supremacy and settler colonial mindsets in order to provide, you know, equal access to these resources and to the many, many benefits that they provide.
Thank you for that answer, all of you. Wow, it's really incredible to think of the centrality of forests in this program. I wanna bring up something that was mentioned at the beginning, that this Green New Deal for our forests platform is the product of the Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance Working Group. And so Dylan, I wanna start with you, since you and I had the opportunity to sit on the steering committee of the Alliance. Could you tell us a little bit about what the Alliance is and kind of how this platform came about under that umbrella?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance was the product of a convergence that I actually didn't attend, but a convergence organized in kind of middle America, in which a number of our kind of key organizers here, you know, all found each other having traveled thousands of miles, you know, to another state to talk about issues of forests and forest carbon. And I think it generated a really important kind of realization, which is that we needed a space in Oregon and Washington in the Pacific Northwest region where our different organizations and grassroots groups could come together and talk about our strategies and our priorities in order to be more effective and to shift this conversation away from, you know, our insular siloed areas of talking about conservation and biodiversity to talking about this bigger, broader vision of climate justice and intersectional organizing throughout the region. So currently the Forest Climate Alliance is made up of over 100 groups, I believe, you know, ranging from being national scale nonprofits to being made up of, you know, a handful of grassroots organizers fighting to protect their watersheds in Northwestern Oregon, and operates as you know, a landing area for all of these ideas and for this cross-pollination between movements, so that we can really build a truly representative and grassroots movement to ensure that we're protecting our forests, protecting our water sources, and protecting our communities from the ravages of industrial timber and irresponsible public land management.
Yeah, and it's just been so inspiring being a part of that alliance. The Coast Range Association is a part of that, as along with all the other groups here represented, and like you mentioned, Jill, and many others. And it's great that this specific working group, the Green New Deal working group, you know, so much has spawned off of that. There's and ideas have been built off of that. The Coast Range Association has our Green New Deal for Industrial Forest document that's very specific on private lands. There's y'all are doing fantastic work coordinating and communicating with all sorts of different organizations, but the Oregon Just Transition Alliance comes to mind. And you know, even just talking about the Green New Deal, House Resolution 109, with it has such a strong focus on frontline communities. They use that word, frontline communities, in HR 109. And our Green New Deal for Pacific Northwest Forests has a really strong focus on that. And I want to ask y'all, what do they mean? What is in the HR 109? What do frontline communities mean? What does it mean in this document that we're talking about? And, you know, what is unique about Oregon's frontline communities?
So, you know, frontline communities is a pretty broad term. And in the resolution, it describes BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, people of color communities. It describes low-income communities, deindustrialized and rural communities, and communities that are generally going to disproportionately experience the impacts and hardships of the climate crisis and a transition away from fossil fuels and from an extractive economy that's been driving the climate crisis to one of, you know, regeneration and solidarity, as we put it in our Green New Deal. And, you know, in Oregon, we absolutely have our Indigenous communities and BIPOC communities. And we also have a ton of folks living in deindustrialized rural logging towns. And, you know, that's not to in any way minimize the role that BIPOC and Indigenous communities have to play. But I think that when speaking about our forests in particular, there's a really specific piece that we need to hit on, which is how can we support these communities that have been decimated in the past few decades by the timber industry, and how can we revitalize them and protect them and uplift them as we work to create this new regenerative paradigm and way that we interact with the natural world and our natural resources. And so one thing that we've really focused on is looking at, you know, first of all, the root causes of that deindustrialization, which, you know, can be really clearly traced back to policies of free trade and the consolidation of industry under Reagan, as well as the kind of concerted effort to break the labor unions that used to be very strong in the timber industry, in addition to increased automation. And it was just conveniently, you know, blamed on our friend, the Northern Spotted Owl, and you know, some granola-eating environmentalists, when in reality, as we know with the framing of the New Deal and the Green New Deal, that couldn't be further from the truth, right? We stand to benefit most when we work in solidarity with workers and working communities as environmentalists, and really trying to shift this paradigm to one in which we're looking at these root causes, like I said, and then in offering solutions, which, you know, are already popping up in these new economies of ecotourism and other like regenerative agriculture and other pieces that are becoming more and more prevalent in rural communities. I don't know if anyone else wants to speak to that.
Yeah, and in Oregon, there's many ways that our farming communities are very negatively impacted by what industrial forestry and the timber industry does. All the rural and deindustrialized communities that Dylan mentioned often have their watersheds polluted, the rivers filled with sedimentation. One example, at least in Corbett, a town up in northwest Oregon, they relied only on two streams for their entire water. And when there was a timber company bought and clear cut right next to one of those two streams, it filled it with sedimentation and pollution and made it unusable, putting the water supply in jeopardy. Rural communities are also often on the front lines of wildfire. And then also, like farm workers, a lot of times who are migrant farm workers and don't have the same legal protections, have to work when there are wildfires, work in toxic smoke conditions. Prison labor is used both in by the Department of Forestry for forest management and also to fight wildfires. And just overall, the exacerbation of the climate crisis caused by industrial forestry just leads to worse environmental injustice. Under a blue sky, below a towering forest canopy, a group of people stand in a gurgling stream while the chirps of birds sound overhead. They take measurements and write down observations, collecting information on this river and the life it supports. On the other side of Oregon, in a dry ponderosa pine forest, above a carpet of grass and shrubs, people talk and laugh, gathering knowledge on the carbon storage of those trees and their contribution in the fight against climate change. Hundreds of miles away, a new college graduate decides to join a team of scientists monitoring the recovery of the red tree vole, being able to fulfill the dream her parents couldn't. It is years from now, years following the enactment of the Green New Deal for Pacific Northwest forests, following a hard struggle against the lies and warped truth of the timber industry and the politicians they bought out. But the struggle was successful, and we now finally base our relationship with forests on truth and knowledge, both from the new studies carried out frequently and the traditional ecological knowledge indigenous communities have learned since time immemorial. Today, no one claims that cutting down trees could solve wildfire, or that logging forests for timber or biomass could possibly be a carbon solution. Today, anyone who desires a job monitoring, studying, and investigating a forest can get one. This Jobs Corps helps guide our relationship with forests, exposing water quality and flow, carbon storage and sequestration, the recovery of once endangered plants, animals, and fungi, the rehabilitation of forests abused for generations for the sake of profit, and the resilience of our forests to global climate change. Now, science is a field anyone can enter, no matter their background. Today, indigenous communities have the ability to use and implement their knowledge gained since time immemorial, following the return of much of their ancestral lands and the freeing of their societies from a colonial, capitalist, and extractive economy they were forced into. These practices lead the way and inspire management of all lands. Today, the government doesn't conspire with industry to bury knowledge, it works to spread and implement it and synthesize it for easy understanding and implementation. This knowledge, science, and research helps us transform our relationship with nature from one based on extraction and domination to one based on mutuality and coexistence.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Check back in 2 weeks for part two of our Green New Deal for Pacific Northwest Forests conversation with more inspiring visions for the future of Pacific Northwest Forests read by these amazing community organizers. To read the Green New Deal for Pacific Northwest Forests document and to sign on as an organization or individual, visit bit.ly/GND4PNW Forests. Music in this episode by Dylan Plummer. Sounds from a Work Progress Administration promotional video and a field recording I did of birds in 10 Mile Creek on the Oregon coast. Coast Range Radio is on all podcasting services. You can check us out online and subscribe to get the newest episode every 2 weeks. We'll talk to you next time. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO's Earth Day special programming is supported by our members and by the Columbia SLU Watershed Council's SLU DIY House Party, an excuse to let loose. An online benefit on Friday, April 23rd, with live music from